End-of-life care can be a difficult conversation, but planning is crucial to help have more productive conversations, to shore up potential care plans, and ultimately, to face the truth of what's to come. It's normal to feel overwhelmed or scared, but avoiding the topic can cause more problems later. In this episode, Supporting Your Parents' End-of-Life Care with Confidence, I'm sharing five considerations to help you support your ailing or end-of-life parent in the most action-oriented and efficient manner. But first, welcome to the Hope is Not a Plan podcast, where we address tough questions head-on, face our problems, and highlight our hopes by providing actionable planning steps to improve ourselves, mind, body, and spirit. Now, let's get logged in and get locked on to this episode of the Hope is Not a Plan podcast. Opening the conversation. The importance of open communication with your parents and their wishes is paramount. And it can't be a totally objective conversation like you can have at work because these are your parents, right? There's emotion. There's a whole lot of things involved. But this part, just getting to the discussion, say your family member, your parent just got a diagnosis or they're a year or two into it and they're ailing and they're failing. This is often the hardest. Trust me, it is so hard. And you all are out there that are faced with this too. I'm 50. If you're in your 40s or 50s, this is where we are. Parents are getting older. Or maybe you're younger, but your parent, they got a bad diagnosis. We have to talk about it. For me, I've been fortunate. I've been close to my parents my whole life. But we're not talking about retirement plans here. We're talking about potential treatments for this illness. Comfort measures to take away their pain and make them comfortable and less anxious. And eventually, funeral arrangements. This is tough stuff. Here's some tips for approaching the conversation that I've found helpful. Have the tough talks in a private setting when possible. Some talks happen. Some discussions happen in transit. You just found out you just left the doctor's room, the office, and you're in the hospital, the doctor's office, or you're in the car. You're letting that emotion out, or you're in the hospital itself, and it's critical time where you have to have the discussion. But privacy is obviously, there's legal requirements, but more so, you're talking about a parent, a patient that's still there that can hear you, right? And they're part of the conversation, which we'll get into here in a little bit. This is where, for us as the children of an ailing patient or end-of-life patient or parent, this is where listening comes into play, listening to hear. It's hard for us not to project what we want for our parents, right? Especially if it doesn't align with their wishes and our wishes don't align, that's tough. You know, it's their life and eventually it's their death. It's okay if there's some back and forth and healthy conflict. But the roller coaster you're experiencing by taking care of your parent when they're sick and then near end of life, people are going to get mad and sad and tired. And we're not going to agree on what's what, but that's where we have to keep the conflict healthy. If your parent has a wish and maybe you as the adult child have a different perspective or an expertise in a certain area, then have that discussion. It's like a team, right? A team setting with the focus. While the focus is on the parent, the conversation with their family should be open and honest discussion. And this is, again, it's hard. What if you haven't been close to your parents? What if you haven't talked about all this stuff? If you have a parent that's been really reserved and they haven't shared a lot of their health things, and then boom, here it is. Don't point fingers. You are where you are. Managing our emotions. Remember, emotions come and go. They don't stay with us forever. They will be with you through this journey. But it's okay. Keep the conflict healthy. Acknowledge, as I've said, plans may change and flexibility is key, right? Plans are useless. Planning is everything, or as the old Yiddish proverb states, man plans and God laughs. It applies to the fullest in this situation. We can have the best care plan and treatment schedule and idealistic vision in our heads of where our parents will be treated and where they'll stay and the sunset they'll watch as they pass on to the next life. But that doesn't mean life will follow our plans or our schedules or our visions. And that's okay. And that's hard to let go. But I implore you, as you're having these conversations, keep it patient-focused, healthy conflict, and realize the plans most likely are somehow going to change. The second big area we'll focus on is understanding care options. there's so many, and I'm not an expert, so I'm going to touch on these from what I've been exposed to, and you know, both in my previous life as a hospital corpsman and in public safety and in a public health emergency planner, where we looked at the whole population, which included some of these care situations, just to give you an idea to help you take your hopes you have for your parent and turn them into those plans. There are home care options, right? The considerations first before we get into that is cost. Throughout this journey in healthcare, if you've ever been in healthcare, whether you worked in it or gone to the doctor or gone to someone in the hospital, money matters. There's a cost to everything we're going to talk about and that you have done. The level of care that's needed is a huge consideration. Do they need just someone to check in on them because maybe they have a fall risk, or do they need full care, cleaning and bathing and feeding? There is peace of mind depending on the option that you choose. Are they cared for in a facility that has a good reputation, or the hospital? Are you trying to take care of them at home and staying up and trying to respond to them? And the location, is it close? Is it convenient? That matters, and we'd like to say it doesn't, but it does. So largely, there's home care and then there's senior living facilities, right? In the home, you're going to pay other people to come to your house, or if you have family members, I was able to do that for my father somewhat and my grandfather years ago, but not everybody has that. And my mom did that so much for my dad. But there are personal care assistants. That's not free. But if the home is what the patient is adamant about and everyone agrees and it's the best for the family as well, because that does matter, then look at how that can be financed. There's skilled nursing care, right? Nurses that come into the home and do a lot of the feeding and bathing and caring for and turning if someone's bedridden. There's hospice care at home, and this is often a plan, as I want to be pain managed at home and I want to pass on in my bed, or often in a hospital bed in your room or in your living room or somewhere else. There are financial implications to each of these. There's also supportive implications, and what we'll talk about in a little bit is there's implications for you, the child caregiver, on how hard each of those are on you, which matters to take care of yourself. The other big category is senior living facilities, right? There's independent living. So it's an older community or building where I can do most things for myself. Maybe I have some medical issues and I get some help. There's assisted living, as it seems. There's staff there that help with feeding and movement and some bathing and things. And then there's nursing homes where folks, you know, are a little further down the road and they're less capable to take care of themselves and they have their medicines managed and a whole bunch of other things. You've probably heard horror stories about each of those. I have too. I was in public health and boy, some of that's scary. That's also a thing to consider as the caregivers with your other parent, with you as the children. Where do I want my family member to be, my parent to be? Do I trust them? Do they have a good reputation? Have I heard something about this positive or negative? And again, each of those facilities costs money. Specifically what's covered, and we'll get over this, between Medicare and Medicaid and private insurance, that's something to look into, but you have to consider that. But you're either going to largely choose in the home, at a facility, or at some point in the hospital. Third category, medical and legal considerations. So there are things that I'll touch on called power of attorney. This gives a person, or one or more persons rather, the power to act on the patient's or your parent's behalf as an agent. Is this necessary? Is it? It's one of the many crucial conversations that we'll need to have, right? So at some point, maybe they get so sick they can't make decisions from the meds, from the medical issue, from whatever it is. And you as the child caregiver, or you with your parent's spouse, that's a discussion you need to determine. There's also similarly a healthcare proxy, right? As a representative or surrogate or agent, and I'll share the links to all these in the show notes and on the post. It's a person who can make healthcare decisions, right, if they're unable or if your parent trusts you to do so, right? It's done through a durable power of attorney. All these are very legal, heavy. They're documented as they should be. As you've watched the news, some family members don't make good decisions for their other family members, their parents, but we're focused on the good decisions here. So power of attorney, healthcare proxy, those are two kind of big bucket things. Then we're talking about these advanced directives and living wills. And a living will is basically, while I'm alive, I'm going to say, make a legal document that spells out the medical treatments I would or wouldn't want to be used to keep me alive, right? Also preferences on medical decisions, pain management, organ donation, those kind of things. So that's a living will, another legal document. These are all planning elements we have to pull together. Advanced directives need to be in writing, and they vary by each state. One of the most well-known, I believe, and that I'm most familiar with from working in critical care for a long time is called the DNR, or Do Not Resuscitate. As a medical person, both when I had patients that were not my family member and then certainly when it was family members, it's hard for me not to act, to know I could do maybe these things and keep this person alive, but this is patient focus. Remember, as we said earlier, do not resuscitate means if I should have a cardiac arrest or stop breathing, you're not going to do anything for me. You're going to let me pass on. That's a hard discussion. It's a hard reality. It's something hard to accept, but it's part of this whole process. It's part of this planning process. And a key to each of these is have these documents available, have hard copies. It's kind of old school, but it's good to have some sort of electronic backup. I use online backup. I use Dropbox, no affiliation, but I'll share this, and this was the non-sexy part of doing incident management or disaster recovery, was the documentation unit. But document management is a hallmark of all good planners. It's essential to help us better support our parents. Creating a folder with all these crucial documents we talked about will prove invaluable as you and your parents travel between appointments in the hospital and after your parents pass and make funeral arrangements, celebration of life, whatever services you need, you're going to need copies of these. What I didn't talk about is the death certificate. Basically, the documents you needed in life, you will need in death and more in some cases. So have them ready, have them available, keep them in a safe place. Next, we need to talk about finances, Medicare, Medicaid, long-term care. We talked about those different care modalities, some of them. Who's going to pay for them? How are we going to pay for them? So I'm going to share some considerations from the big ones that people know about. Again, I'll have links to these and you can dive into them. So there's Medicare, Medicaid, long-term care insurance. That's what I'm touching on now. Medicare, 65 and older or 65 and younger if you have a disability or a condition and qualify. And as you can imagine, with big government, there's some qualifiers there. For this, patients pay part of the cost by way of like premiums, deductibles, or coinsurance. And there's four parts to Medicare. There's Part A, which is hospital insurance. There's Part B, which is Medicare insurance, then Medicare Advantage. Those kind of cover more and maybe cost a little more or less is a very generic way to put that. And then Part D is drugs, what drugs are covered or not. And again, links to in the show notes. It's all spelled out on the Medicare website. Same with Medicaid. Medicaid is focused on limited income resource, folks with limited income and resources, right? You might have a small copayment, but basically it's based off income and family size. So Medicare, largely, if you worked, there's probably a number threshold there, but basically if you had a regular job and you can afford your own insurance, Medicare may supplement that. Largely, Medicaid often is for folks that may have worked but just didn't make a lot or they have a big family. Long-term care insurance is not covered by Medicare, right? It's budget assets, financial condition, financial goals, things to consider, age and health, right? So the costs, when you get this, if you're older, it's going to cost more and you might have to get a physical exam. So it is what it is. It's if I want some of those long-term care options in a facility, some at home, but Medicare actually covers a lot of the in-home stuff hospice-wise, then you can pay for that. So things to consider, those terms are going to come up when you're talking about end-of-life care and planning. What you may find harder than navigating insurance and legal things and which government program is going to cover what is talking money with your parents, right? Most children probably didn't do that. I didn't. But in addition to real talk about healthcare, we got to get real uncomfortable and real transparent about finance. Is the person that's sick or near the end of life the primary breadwinner? So then that's going to have an effect on what's coming in for payments and benefits. And then bills don't stop, as we know. So how are we going to do that? So part of these conversations, these crucial conversations, is going to have to be, okay, monetarily, where are you at, mom or dad? How can we help? Let's lay it on the line. Let's make a budget, right? Let's see what's coming in. Let's see what's going out. How's this going to change? And I think what's very helpful and something I learned from one of my family members recently is to add a little padding to live. For the surviving parent, they're still here. They still want to go to dinner with friends or maybe get you a little something. So when you budget the straight up what's coming in, what has to go out to cover it, and then think about how does my parent still get to live their life? still sad, still missing their spouse. But we need to build that into the budget. I think that's pretty critical. Here's where we don't focus quite as much on the patient. We focus on us, the child who's helping our parent help our other parent, and just have to acknowledge that there's a huge amount of stress from this, but there's also great opportunity. For me, as a former U.S. Navy hospital corpsman, I cared for some of the most injured, sick, and terminally ill patients the U.S. military could provide. It was my honor, and I did it pretty well. This experience, combined with my time as a firefighter EMT, an emergency management person, it really helped kind of prepare me from that standpoint of crisis management to support my dad and my mom while my dad was sick. And now my mom, while that my dad's passed away. Given that baseline, though, my experience over the past couple of years is different, because now this is my dad. And it's going to be different for you. Even if you've been in healthcare and you've been a nurse or a doctor, or you've managed crisis, or you've done anything similar or adjacent to what you're about to do, that helps and draw on that. But let it be hard, because it's supposed to be, and it's okay. So as you draw on what you can do, put in the time, the conversations, and the work, and help them as they helped you in life, but also build in time for yourself, or you will burn out like a candle dipped in gasoline. Remember, you can't pour from an empty cup. So how did I prepare and process, and how do I wholeheartedly believe you can too? Keep focus on those 7 pillars. Take ownership of your role as the child of an ailing parent, and out of an empowered, action-oriented, planning child. Practice mindfulness by not forgetting to breathe. Go for walks, get outside and out of the patient room. Soak in some nature if you can. Movement will come as you walk to and from appointments, to the patient's room, your parents' room, to the back of the house, wherever you're going. Maybe add some exercise to burn through, not burn off, some of the fear, the sadness, the anger, because that's going to be there. Or whatever emotion you're processing, remember, move a muscle, change a thought. It works. Set boundaries for yourself and talk to your caregiving parent on what they and you are comfortable doing for your sick parent. Can you help them go to the bathroom? Can you get them dressed? Not everybody's comfortable with that. Do they want you to do that? Or not. Not everybody wants to be seen in their worst. Make this hard time an opportunity to strengthen the connection you have with your parents. If your connection's broken, consider reconnecting it. You must sleep. This will be hard to do on the tougher days. Sleep is where we heal inside and out. Have faith. Give up the weight of this hardship to something bigger than you. While sickness and death are part of the human experience, that doesn't mean that there isn't something more than human we can call on to help carry our stress and sorrow. We were fortunate, and you probably will be too, hopefully, in the area that you live, that the hospice program at the hospital offered grief counseling. But in addition to formal kind of sitting there and talking about how you're feeling and do you have any questions and many things that counseling or therapy could offer, hospice was able to explain what was happening, right? To my family members that didn't see death, hadn't seen death, to me, who saw my dad at end of life. And while I was used to seeing end of life, it wasn't my parent. So I encourage you to speak with the hospice folks in your area if you get to that point, when you get to that point. They have been through this many, many times. They are an amazing special breed of people. Shout out to Corelli and Roanoke, to those hospice folks. They were amazing and helped my father pass on with dignity and supported us. And again, we had many crucial conversations. I thank each of you for listening to the Hope Is Not a Plan podcast. It's a tough but necessary episode. I call each of you to take action to be the resource your parents need in this time of hardship. To learn more about the 7 pillars, go to hopesnotaplan.com. Follow me at hopesnotaplan on Instagram and Twitter. There's a Hope Is Not a Plan Facebook page. And this podcast can be found on every platform: Apple, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, etc., etc. Thank you again for listening, subscribing, sharing. Leave a review. And remember these five things. Open the conversations now about what good end of life looks like to your parent. Number two, dive into the care options available to you and your parent. Three, review the medical and legal considerations of who can make decisions. Four, review the finances in play now for the future. And five, just as important as the other four things, don't forget to take care of yourself as you support your parents. Good planning will bring you and your parents peace of mind. The best example I can share of this was the last appointment my dad had at his cancer specialty center with my mom and myself and the nurse practitioner and my dad. And my mom and I had had that tough decision and discussion about these are the things we need to bring up now. No surprise, probably to you all as listeners, that my mom has always been a list maker. And so prior to that appointment, she, on a notepad, wrote down a list of the most crucial things we had to talk about. What else can we do? How much time do we have? What is hospice? What is palliative care? Where do we go from here? And our prepared list helped drive that conversation. It was also terrifying. The reality of where we were is where we were. It was such a good list that the nurse practitioner made a copy of it as reference. But my mom and I had crucial conversations earlier that day and the night before. We were at a point where we had to really talk about time. And that is hard. But if you pull together these planning elements we've talked about, it will provide reassurance to you and to both of your parents. And as we found, to the providers doing their best to extend their life and give them peace. Good planning, good discussions can change lives, even when it's at the end of it. Thank you all for changing my life by listening to the show. Stay safe out there, everybody. Wash your hands, and I wish you all Godspeed.